Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. We design, craft and install beautiful kitchens. cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
European leaders are gathering in Brussels this morning for a high-stakes meeting to discuss how to step up military, financial and diplomatic support to Ukraine. They'll also explore using immobilized or frozen Russian assets as a source of funding for future support. Let's get more on this now with Shona Murray, who's Europe correspondent with Euronews. Good morning, Shona.
Morning, Claire.
Now, this summit is being billed as decision time, a decision time summit due to Russia's increasingly provocative behaviour. So what is on the table today?
Well, key discussion, but there won't be a major decision on this, is, as you mentioned there, using immobilised frozen Russian assets to be transferred to Ukraine. That's about 140 billion euro to be used for the Ukraine to buy more weapons and for budgetary purposes. And then the EU member states would guarantee that money. Now, the majority of that money is held here in Belgium. So the idea is that it would go to Ukraine, and if Russia ever decided to repair the loan or decide to pay reparations to Ukraine, then Russia could get that 140 billion euro back, and EU member states will guarantee that that money can go back to Russia. So it's very complicated, and it's really in the embryonic stages because countries like Belgium are really concerned that it'll impact their credibility and they will be stuck in arbitration with Russia if Russia decides to sue. So it's complicated, but we just heard from Micheál Martin, the Taoiseach there, who said that no matter what, Ireland is fully committed to doing this. They're saying that why should Europe be paying for Russia's destruction of Ukraine? These frozen assets should be used, and it doesn't have any implications for Irish neutrality because the money doesn't just go on weapons, it also goes on budgetary purposes.
So why are the Belgians so particularly concerned, Shona?
Well, majorly concerned because, first of all, they are worried that when this emerges, will it be within international law? So therefore, does the Belgian credibility as a financial services hub, does that get destroyed from maybe other countries investing in it? And then key to it is Russia going to sue? And will then Belgium be on the hook for years of arbitration and payment of legal fees and so on? So they're really concerned about that. And they're also worried about the implications of the euro. But mostly they're saying we're the ones taking the risk because the money is in a Belgian repository.
Okay, but other countries, including our own Ireland, are fully behind this plan. Are there any other wavering parties in the EU?
Most countries were wavering, except for when Germany, about a couple of weeks ago, Friedrich Merz, the German Chancellor, said, no, let's do it. Because, like I said, there was concerns about the implications for the euro and the ECB. The French are almost there because they're also concerned about this. But let's say most of them in theory and in principle believe that why should Russia have frozen assets of 140 billion euro in European banks while the rest of Europe is paying for all of Ukraine? Now, remember, the United States is not funding the Ukraine war anymore. So they're saying, you know, in theory, in principle, we have to do it. One country, though, Hungary, surprise, surprise, is saying they're not getting involved. So this will be a 26-country endeavour if it passes.
And Viktor Orban is staying away this morning. He's coming this afternoon, though, is he?
That's right. I mean, there is a Hungarian commemoration day today, so he'll be spending that in Budapest. But actually, coincidentally, Zelensky is here this morning, and he is right now actually addressing leaders. And then by the time he leaves, Viktor Orban will be checking in.
Okay, so Vladimir Zelensky speaking this morning at the summit, yeah. And then he'll speak to the press later on today, will he?
That's right. He's due about 1 o'clock Irish time to do a press conference. I mean, he's obviously very grateful for the fact that last night we heard the United States is applying sanctions against Russia, and also the EU managed to pass its 19th sanctions package, which involves things like the shadow fleet. It's brought forward the date of completely ending any reliance on Russian fossil fuels by 2027. There are a number of individuals and ambassadors and so on that are on the sanctions package. So he's welcoming that, but also the issue of Tomahawks is still on the agenda, although that's not for Europe, but obviously the importance of Ukraine getting access to weapons and missiles that can strike into Russian territory, that's obviously a discussion that's being had as well. So Zelensky was here welcoming those sanctions package and pushing for more, basically.
So, I mean, this is prompted not only by, as you say, the American decision not to fund this war, but also because of provocation by Russia in recent times. I mean, the likely involvement of Russian drones in those Danish drone sightings, which resulted in airport closures last month. I mean, that is why there's a real urgency now, isn't there?
Huge. I mean, that's why that's part of the agenda today is the bringing forward of Europe's defence strategy by 2030, in particular the so-called drone wall, which there's an urgency for that on the eastern flank of Europe, because that's where the airspace violations have occurred across Finland, of course, Poland, Romania and other parts of Europe. So that's really the sort of the key priority. And then after that, it's about things like undersea cables, radars, detection and other things that are important for the hybrid war that Russia is engaging in across Europe. So Ireland, I want to ask the Taoiseach about this morning, about what Ireland's involvement will be. And Ireland will, of course, have to engage in some way defending the whole of the European continent, because Ireland, although it's not in NATO and is militarily neutral, it has an obligation to defend itself and therefore be part of the whole defence of the continent.
And Seana, there's also on the agenda some discussion on housing, how to support access to affordable and decent housing across member states. And that's unusual, isn't it, to be on the EU Council summit agenda?
It's unprecedented. And what's happening is, obviously, the housing issue is a major concern for all member states. And in particular, the Dutch, I spoke to some Dutch diplomats who really were pushing for this to be on the agenda. There's obviously, the housing part per se is massive because it's implications for all citizens. And the other piece is that it's fueling the far right. And we've just heard about that, obviously, in your item beforehand, all across Europe. So it has political implications for member states as well. And remember when Ursula von der Leyen, she appointed for the first time ever the first EU commissioner for housing. So there hasn't been any a proper discussion on it. But I think today what they'll be talking about is, rather than funding for housing, will be about how the simplification of rules around buying housing, around building housing and environmental rules and so on. So that's really going to be part of the context. But in the future, remember, the EU doesn't have any competence normally over housing, but it didn't have competence over health during COVID either. So you had, but we saw joint procurement on vaccines. So where there's a will, there's a way. When member states want the commission to try to create some sort of competence and they support it, then that can happen, although it's a bit of a long way off.
Seana, thank you very much. Seana Murray there, Europe correspondent for Euronews. I'm also joined by Scott Lucas, who's Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD. And good morning to you, Scott. Thank you for joining us this morning. We know that Ukraine and Europe are pushing for a ceasefire along the current front lines as a first step towards any peace agreement. Is it unlikely that Vladimir Putin would ever agree to that?
Oh, Putin won't agree to it. But because he hasn't agreed to it, including his foreign minister, Sergei Lavrov, restating Russia's maximum demands on Tuesday, not only that Ukraine give up more territory, not only that there be no security guarantees for Ukraine, but that in effect the Zelensky government should be toppled. He has opened up the space for a convergence of pressure from not only Ukraine and Europe, but also now the United States, which I think will limit his ability to try to pursue those maximum goals. Let's take three things that have happened that converge today. Seana Murray summarized some of them, but emphasize the importance of the convergence. From the American side, despite Donald Trump again wavering last week, despite he almost being manipulated by Vladimir Putin in that phone call, Russia's insistence on maintaining its attacks has meant that the U.S. has imposed sanctions on Russia's two largest oil companies. Now, what may be even more significant is there may be sanctions put on those people who deal with those oil companies, including China and India. Now, that would be major in limiting Russian revenues. And then, as Seana was describing, that converges with the European extension of sanctions, advancing the date for the cutoff of its imports of Russian natural gas. More sanctions on Russia's shadow fleet that tried to move oil around and circumvent restrictions, and further restrictions on Russia's financial sector. And then on top of that, that ongoing support for Ukraine, which is what you get from this measure that we're looking at, which is the use of the Russian frozen assets to support the 140 billion euro loan. All of this means that Putin's not going to give up his goal to make Ukraine part of Greater Russia, but he'll be under increasing pressure. And far from Donald Trump being in his pocket, the responsible officials in the Trump administration are part of that effort to contain him.
Yeah, I mean, this is what has been said from the beginning from those who are pushing for really meaningful sanctions. Are we at that point now?
I think we're getting to that point. And again, I think you put this in convergence with two other things that are happening and what is a multi-front conflict. The first is Russia's making only very, very small advances on the front line, on the ground. I think they've taken 0.4 of 1% of Ukrainian territory since the start of the year for all the effort they've thrown into this. So they're not getting a breakthrough on the ground. And then at the same time, Ukraine is having increasing effect with these counterattacks. What have been drone strikes, but now are missile strikes on Russian oil refineries, Russian gas pipelines, railway hubs, chemical plants, electronics plants. And in what has been a further significant development, blink and you might miss it, Trump administration officials have confirmed that they have finally lifted the ban, which has been here throughout the conflict, on Ukraine using British and French missiles to hit inside Russia. And guess what? British Storm Shadow missiles were used earlier this week in a strike on a key chemical plant inside Russia. So the Trump administration, although it did not supply those Tomahawk cruise missiles to Ukraine yet, has actually done something equally important by lifting the restriction on the use of European missiles.
They've also got this deal now with the Swedes and the Ukrainians to get these Gripen aircraft, which are apparently more suitable for use in Ukraine than anything they've had before.
I think this is part of a longer-term effort, though, Claire. And again, Shona was referring to the fact that Europe is having to upgrade its defense posture because of the Russian hybrid warfare. And I say that simply because the Gripens, and about 100 to 150 is what Ukraine are seeking. It'll take several years to get them to Ukraine. So that's more of, while Ukraine is being defended in the short term by the immediate measures we've described, making sure that Europe and Ukraine are prepared for the longer-term conflict.
Scott, thank you very much for your time. Scott Lucas there, Professor of US and International Politics at the Clinton Institute in UCD. Some news from the show business world. Claudia Winkleman and Tess Daly have announced together that they're leaving Strictly Come Dancing. They have issued a joint statement on Instagram saying that they're going to leave the show together at the end of the current series. "We've loved working as a duo," they said, "and hosting Strictly has been an absolute dream. We were always going to leave together and now feels like the right time." But of course, all the coverage will be asking the question, why does now feel like the right time for that team to leave that very successful programme? We'll take a break, back after this.